that I think a 150-pound protester lying prone on the ground, who is picked up and dragged away passively, poses just as much risk to the officer's back as one who's kicking and screaming. And I didn't honestly ask the question to trigger this debate, but I'm glad I did, because I'm beginning to think I don't like this bill, and it may not be for the reasons it was offered. And I say that for Representative Minnis's benefit, because I think that he makes a valid point, and maybe he'd like to address this concern, because now I'm frankly getting a little confused, but I don't think it's a kicking and screaming language, and I think the passive resistance problem is substantial itself. So.
Representative, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, I would. I guess I'm surprised at the direction this debate has gone, because the bill and the examples that I have in front of me and the examples that I could have offered ad infinitum in front of the committee, should the committee have wanted to hear that information, would be time after time where a police officer attempts to make an arrest and there is physical resistance on the part of the individual. And I'm not talking passive resistance. The bill is never intended to deal with passive resistance. I have no intention that the bill would ever even cover the instance of passive resistance where somebody just limps up. I'm talking about someone who's told, number one, you're under arrest. They recognize it's a police officer. The officer attempts to put handcuffs on them, and they begin to kick and flail and fight with the police officer, but their fighting and kicking and flailing is an attempt to escape rather than an attempt to assault. Now, I've got two reject slips from Mike Shrunk's office here. Both of them say, and they cite State versus Crane, and I don't have the exact citation here, it says, does not reflect active violence directed at the officer. And that's the criteria that they're using currently to reject the cases. And what the bill's intended to do is correct that problem. So for what it's worth, it's not intended to deal with passive protesters. And if it does, I'd be glad to amend the bill to change that. It's no problem.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Menace's statement, Representative Mannix's statement, make all the legislative history we need to make on this as far as the committee's intent. And given those statements, I can't believe that if the question ever came up, a judge would come to any other conclusion than that we don't intend to include non-passive resistance here. We have the authority to say what we mean by this bill, and I think we're doing
that. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix?
I know it's unusual to amend a bill in committee, but if you added one phrase, if there was everyone agreeable that it would include, but does not include simple passive resistance, you added that phrase at the end of that section right there, you would make it clear so people don't even have to listen to this tape. And if the committee will indulge that amendment, I would suggest it instead of sending it back. But does not include simple passive resistance.
Now, Representative Mannix and Chair, Mr. Chair, let me ask. I'm probably in the wrong position on this bill to be asking for this indulgence. But before we suspend the rules of the committee, which I suppose we could have done for Senate Bill 149. I would join in taking this back to the subcommittee and having the amendment that Representative Mannix is proposing be inserted, so that we don't have to engage in suspending the rules of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make that motion.
Representative Minnis? Move the bill back to the subcommittee. Is that correct?
Yes.
Any objection to that motion? So ordered. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2891. Learned counsel.
Chair, committee members, House Bill 2891 provides that upon release from any form of incarceration, the official in charge of a released sex offender shall obtain the offender's address and enter it into the Law Enforcement Data System, or LEDS. The bill also provides that when a convicted sex offender is released on probation or discharged by the court, the local probation department must enter the offender's address into LEDS. This bill, with the dash two amendments, the most recent ones, further provides that when a convicted sex offender of the type described above changed his address, he must report the change of address to the appropriate entity, and this maintenance of address provision will be in effect for 5 years after the person's released, discharged, or finishes their parole or probation.
Sure. Thank you, counsel. Representative Courtney?
I was just going to move House Bill 2891 as amended to floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2891 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Representative Clark, were you calling the question, or do you have a question?
Asking a question, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
I guess it's a question for the chair of the crime sub. Since he's not here, I'll ask the question of any member of the crime sub who can answer it. Section 2 of the bill and Section 3, line 24, I'm looking at the -2 amendments, uses the phrase discharged, paroled, or released on any form of supervised release. Does discharge include final discharge? See you later. Bye. You're gone. Your sentence is finished.
Representative Clark, Mr. Chair, I believe Council. That was the intent.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
To the bill, then. If that is the intent of the bill, I will vigorously oppose the bill. I can imagine an argument for registering sex offenders who are on supervised release, parole, probation. Mm-hmm. But we're getting ready to register an ex-con. And I think as a matter of... I'm very troubled by that in this area or any other area.
The day is getting longer.
Better vote no. I suppose we could also brand on people's forehead ex-con, but I think as a matter of civil liberties there might be problems with that, and I'm not sure we can constitutionally do what we're getting ready to do.
We're on 2654, 2891, registration of sex offenders.
Right.
Representative Clark, you're opposed to the bill?
Opposed to the bill because I don't think we can constitutionally do that.
Representative Mannix?
I think we can track offenders to the ends of the earth after they've been convicted of a crime. We ought to keep track of them. I'd be concerned about big brotherism in the general sense, but when you can specify a particular type of crime which relates to the nature of the individual, which nature may not be changed or may be changed by subsequent treatment, I'm comfortable with the notion of being able to keep track of them for the protection of the community. Because theoretically, we could incarcerate them for the rest of their lives, but in our system, we're willing to let them out at some point. If we're going to let them out, I'd like to know where they're going to go.
Okay. Representative Bryant? By the way, if you're wondering, it may be a long day today. Things are kind of falling apart, and I don't... What? Only for some of us. I don't know if we'll even get to family justice today.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
At least the Finance Committee. At least a short
meeting. I need a weenie meeting.
Well, weenie meeting, he said.
Tiny meeting. What? Oh, it's maybe a long day. Representative what?
I'm going to tell us.
I'm going to get to it. But things are not good at this moment. Where are we now? Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chairman, I was not present when this was discussed in its final. Is there a definition of discharge? Are we talking about someone who completed their supervision within the department? The first meeting we had, I brought that issue up, and I felt that as long as they were under some sort of control or supervision of the Department of Corrections, that
was lots of appropriate.
And they probably served their time, so to speak, and have ended their sentence. I realize that in the nature of the offense, but logically you would extend this to a burglar or assaulted, adjudicated and has been discharged would be on record. Making a provision for
discharge. Mr. Chairman?
Oops. Representative Miller.
Because of the interest of in time and the considerable need for additional discussion, I'd move House Bill 2891 back to the subcommittee on crime corrections.
Representative Miller moves House Bill 2091 back to the Subcommittee on Crime and Corrections. Any further discussion?
Yes, on the motion.
Yes, Representative Miller.
We've already referred it back to that subcommittee once before for a minor amendment. With all due deference to Representative Miller, I think some of us are prepared to bite the bullet one way or the other on this. And I could just explain that there's a five-year limitation as to the registration. And in effect, yes, we're tacking on to someone's sentence, a five-year tracking. It's a form of sentence that would be added on automatically. I think we could vote up or down. It's a clear bill. The position is there. But maybe there's something else that needs to be done to the bill. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, yes, if I can respond. I just, Representative Mannix, I'm persuaded by your courtesy to other members so that we can go down with a unified front like we try to do on almost every bill.
I withdraw my objection.
Okay.
To that motion, and that's why I asked the question originally, Representative Miller, as to whether discharge intent was intended to include final discharge. And I think the very clear answer we're getting is yes. If that's the intent of the bill, and if the bill is going to come back from the crime sub, I'm not sure there's any reason to send it back, and I appreciate your courtesy in moving it back. But if that's what the bill is going to say, and that's what the intent of the bill is going to be, then I agree. We ought to just have the vote and go to the floor with it. Okay. I don't like it, but if the committee thought about it, the subcommittee thought about it, made that decision, and sent it out, then I'm not sure there's any reason to send it back.
Okay. I just want to move on, so I don't care either way.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Ms. Zook.
I believe the committee should have a chance to consider that. I don't think it was deliberated thoroughly.
Okay, that's great. That's helpful.
Any objection to going back, Representative Mannix? Okay. Senate Bill 279, Transfer of Interest in Property, Prescribed Effective Date. Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 297 comes to you from the civil sub and was referred to us by the Oregon State Bar. This bill relates to the common law rule against perpetuities. And the common law rule against perpetuities that is tended to make disposition of property by gift, devise, or conveyance certain within a reasonable length of time. All this common law rule against perpetuities was established many years ago by case law. This bill adopts a uniform act and would have the statutory rule against perpetuities as opposed to a rule against perpetuities established through case law.
Mr. Chair?
The bill was unamended.
Dan Clark.
Just wonder if Learned Counsel would give us a two-minute detailed explanation of the rule against perpetuities.
No, he won't. Everything must vest within 21 years of a life and being, and something about a fertile octogenarian and other things like that.
Anybody else who talks in this bill ends up carrying it. Jared moved Senate Bill 297 to the floor. Do pass. As amended?
Yes. No
amendments.
No amendments.
Further discussion, if not, clerk, call roll.
Representative Baum?
Yes.
Bauman?
I'm sorry, Kelly.
Bauman?
Aye.
Brian?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Yes.
Bannock?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I would really love to carry this bill. I really would, genuinely.
Thank you. House Bill 2769 relating to a signed contract. Mr. Taylor, Representative Baum.
Thank you, Chair Mason, members of the committee. ORS 20097 allows a defendant in a contract action based on assignment of the contract to recover attorney's fees against the plaintiff, both the plaintiff in the action and the maker of the contract. This has resulted in some unusual fact situations, and I've set forth in the staff measure summary a case from Malheur County where the former wife of a person was wound up being sued by her former in-laws. She won. She got attorney's fees from them. However, they went into bankruptcy, and she wound up recovering attorney's fees from the bank, which had assigned their interest in the contract to the parents. This bill would basically say that the measure would amend ORS 20097 so that a maker would only be liable if the defense successfully asserted by the defendant existed at the time of the assignment of the contract. There are no amendments to the bill.
Sam Bauman moves House Bill 2769 before do pass unamended. Any further discussion? If not, clerk call roll.
Representative Bauman?
Aye.
Brian?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Calori?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Chair Mason?
Aye. Please, Representative Bowman. That's Southern.
I heard it. I like. I thought she was from my district.
Representative Bowman, if your wife was from Alabama like mine is, you'd understand these without any hesitation whatsoever.
That's right.
Bowman?
Yeah.
Representative Mannix will carry the bill.
Representative Mannix will carry the bill. House Senate Bill 290 relating to writs of garnishment.
Right.
Mr. Taylor, Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Chair Mason, members of the committee. ORS 29.142, subsection 6, requires the court clerk to return garnished funds if the court is determined to be exempt from garnishment to the debtor, or if the funds are not exempt from garnishment, to forward them to the plaintiff within 10 days after the court's order. The current law is unclear as to whether these 10 days means judicial days or calendar days. This measure would clarify it by inserting the word judicial and thus clarifying the ambiguity currently that exists in the statute. This bill comes from the Senate, from the Court Administrator's Office. There were no amendments made.
Representative Bowman, move Senate Bill 290 to the floor. Do pass. Unamended, amended.
Amended.
Oh, is it?
Amended.
That's dash one amendment.
Oh, that's sorry.
Any further discussion? If not, clerk, call roll.
My mistake.
Bryan?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Kalari?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Bowman?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye. Representative Bowman, what's your pleasure?
We have a volunteer on this bill. Representative Baum?
Baum. Senate Bill 290. Senate Bill 137 relating to limited partnerships. Representative Baum, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Mason, members of the committee. With only one exception, the resignation of all registered agents required to be registered with the Secretary of State's Corporation Division is effective on the 31st day after filing notice of resignation. The one exception relates to limited partners, registered agents of a limited partnership. Their effective date is 30 days. To make the law more clear, this bill would say that for limited registered agents of limited partnerships, their effective date of resignation would be 31 days after notification to the Secretary of State's office.
It appears, Mr. Chair, to be a simple bill. I think it is simple is an overstatement, but one must keep in mind that this was proposed at the request of the Secretary of State's office, so I want the carrier.
We'll take home bill for somebody.
Unamended, amended.
Unamended.
Representative Bauman moves Senate Bill 137 to the floor. Do pass. Unamended. Any further discussion?
Question.
If not, clerk, call roll.
Representative Calhoun?
Aye.
Kalari?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes, yes.
Edmondson?
Yes.
Mannix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Here, yes.
Bowman?
Do you want to carry this? Aye.
Bryan?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye. Representative Bowman, what's your pleasure?
Well, I think Representative Clark really wants to carry this. I'm a little bit torn, Mr. Chair, because I think Representative Mannix deserves an opportunity to redeem himself, but... this is a simple bill. We're going to allow Representative Clark to carry it and see.
Because it's a simple bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Despite the fact that I know at least 3,000 or 4,000 registered agents for limited partnerships in my district, and I'm sure they'll be deeply offended by the bill, I'll carry it.
Okay. Senate Bill 301 relating to wills prescribing an effective date. Bowman, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Mason. We may remember this bill as the old wills bill. No statutory provision exists for the destruction of all wills, no matter how old they are. This measure would allow all wills to be destroyed if certain conditions were met, if the will was over 60 years of age.
Are we?
Native execution. You may remember this went to the floor and came back because it was concerned that 30 years was not long enough.
Representative Bowman moves Senate Bill 301 to the floor. Do pass as amended. Any further discussion? If not, clerk, call roll.
Representative
Clark? Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Bowman?
Aye.
Bryan?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Kalari?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
I got eyes right here.
Who was that? Who messed that up before?
Representative Mason. We thought that
yeah,
he should carry that.
Okay.
Up.
Yeah. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Bowman?
Could we comment just a minute on the substance of these bills we're receiving from the Senator? Or it's interesting to note that there's so many substance material coming across from over there.
Well, okay. The chair would like to return to Senate Bill 632. Okay, gentlemen, Senate Bill 632. The situation on Senate Bill 632 and HJR 20 is as follows. HJR 20 passed out. Senate Bill 632 passed out. Senate Bill 632 came out on a 8-4 vote, I believe. Representative Tolori, and the representatives Miller, Minnis, Baum, and
Clark
voting in the negative. HDR 20 came out somewhat in a split form, majority with Mannix, and three or four notices of minority report, Baum, Clark, and Mason. Representative Minnis has withdrawn his notice of reconsideration on HJR 20. However, the chair is in a bit of a quandary because at this moment I have one notice of minority report from Representative Miller, but I have a, Representative Minnis, I don't know if I'm out of line in discussing this, or do you mind, or?
Public body.
Okay. I have a note from Representative Minnis that indeed he is a little disturbed about HJR 20, but will be signing Representative Miller's minority report in SB 632. The rules state that you have until 5 o'clock on session day of the committee to give your notice of minority report. Representative Minnis has not given his notice of minority report, but however has until 5 o'clock of session day today, which puts the chair in a very unusual position because if this meeting is adjourned and notice of minority report is given, then indeed the minority report will be proper and in a proper form, and there is no way for the chair or anyone else in the services to decide to vote to move reconsideration because we will have adjourned. So the chair's intention to either resolve this or to keep us in session until 5.
I don't want to copy.
So I don't know how we can resolve this. Now, I guess, Representative Minnis, the ball is in your court. So how can we resolve this? Representative Miller, do you want
to... Well, I think the ball is in his court.
Okay.
Because it's my understanding, and it would be a departure from anything else, that the only thing that needs to be identified by 5 o'clock is the person who moves the possible minority report. As long as there are some other no votes out there, you don't need to identify the other signer until you have used up your 48 hours or whatever it is, and you need to then acquire the signer. We had another example on HJR 20. We're not sure who is going on which report. So it's not the second signature. As long as we have indication that there is a minority report, it's going to happen.
Okay. Representative
Bob is going to say that's my understanding too. In fact, I fully intend to join in on Representative.
I'm sorry, what?
Never mind.
He may join it.
Yeah, we need to.
What?
We've got a variety of.
Representative Calhoun,
signatures.
You're not going to leave us, are you?
just taking a nice quick recess, Mr. Chairman. I think we should recess.
Okay, I think anybody object to a 15-minute recess? Yes. Recess. Okay. 15-minute recess.
Come here.
Yeah.
Seven 9A 416 24 81 DC. I want some players up here. CSD, where's Diane Perry?
We also have some
this is the bill that I brought back from the floor yesterday because I learned moments before I was to carry it that there were budgetary implications in view of the amendment that we made in our attempt to try to reach out to some groups to get them on board, that when we went from newborn to child, which could be a total of 18 years, that the caseload and everything from that was no longer possible being estimated how much it might cost. Also, apparently, there's been some shift in some of the CSD budgets in terms of both ways and means as well as the governor's emphasis. There was also some concern, to be very frank with you, that I could sense coming up that maybe if you did that and open it up that much, that conceivably some people thought that, we might be including the whole world. So what I'd like to do today, I've talked to the Children's Services Division representatives earlier this morning, as well as representatives in the governor's office, who represented to me that by moving it back to newborn babies, or we have to decide what we mean by that, that the money it would take to take care of that caseload is presently in their estimated budget within the spending limit. And while that budget has not been approved yet and still ways and means, at least that no longer are the budgetary implications as significant as they would have been had we carried House Bill 2041 out on the floor yesterday. Is that correct, pretty much what I've said regarding CSD at this time? Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Thomas. I'm the Administrator of the Children's Service Division, and I think that's basically correct, yes.
All right. Ms. Perry, as I understand it, this bill was introduced a long time ago now, it seems to me, by the request of the governor. This is the bill the governor still wants. Is that correct? And he's very much interested in it. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Is that right or wrong?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Diane Perry, representing Governor Goldschmidt. That is correct.
All right. Let's, Learned Counsel, I asked you yesterday, if you would please, to come up with some amendments that the committee could consider so that no longer we talking child, we could go back and come up with a much more limited definition of what this bill is all about. For those of you here for sentencing guidelines, folks, we're not your show right now. That's another show out in the hallway or in the bleachers or in the gallery or some other parts of this building. So I'm not trying to confuse anybody. We're not any fun and games for you. Okay. Learned Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will find in your packets a memo dated yesterday that has options regarding age for reporting. I think it's third down in the packets that I just handed to you. It seems to me that there are six age options which the committee can choose from. The original bill used the term newborn. In doing some research, the National Institute of Health, the Center on Disease Control, and most doctors considered newborns to be children up to 30 days of age. This option, if the committee adopted it, would specifically include babies that are born drug dependent and would encompass the original intent of the bill. The second option available to the committee, I think, would be to use the word infants, which is defined as children up to 12 months of age. That option would include newborns who test positive, as well as babies who receive drugs through breast milk and directly from the parents. I would note,
Council, can I just interrupt for a second? I'm using Representative Clark's packet. Maybe committee staff could get me a packet so that I can follow along. Thank you.
I would point out to the committee that in the language that was adopted that had to do with limiting prosecution, that sentence actually uses the word both newborn and infant. So if we bring one back, we probably need to use the same word throughout the amendment. The other four choices that are there are ages that exist in statute for other reasons and which the committee might want to consider. The third option would be children up to the age of 2.5 years. That option would include newborns, infants, toddlers who test positive, or children who receive drugs directly. This age came out of statutes used by CSD in terms of staffing daycare facilities. Arguably, it reflects developmental and care needs. It's arbitrary or not arbitrary as other ages this committee's had to consider, but it is a age used in statute upon which certain decisions are made. The fourth one would be children under 5, which are children that are not yet in school. The second one is children under 10. That age is used a lot in statute. It is the age in which children can legally be left alone. It's also the age that the committee has used in looking at exceptions to the hearsay rule in terms of statements made by children. It's also been adopted by the Senate in their videotaping bill. So there's some options there.
And then the sixth option is the one that the committee currently adopted, which is children under 18, which includes children who are given drugs by others or children who take drugs on their own. As I've noted at the bottom, every time you increase the age, you broaden the net, you also broaden the purpose and the impact of the bill. So if we go, if the committee chooses to go back to newborns, you're looking at children who will test positive at birth or soon after birth, and then it goes up.
Not to try to control the discussion, the reason Representative Edmondson came up with this amendment some time ago was to move away from the emphasis on prenatal for obvious reasons. There were some women's groups who were coming down pretty heavy on us. And so we went that far and tried to accommodate them. Apparently it didn't work. Excuse me?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the other issue that was raised at the time was that...
Right, that's... Right, that was right. That's well said. It was just...
What really is a newborn?
Right, what is newborn? And so we went the direction of, as long as you're a minor, basically is what we said, Representative Edmondson. Well, that's what we tried to do. We weren't trying to be funny. We were really trying to make some good law or depending upon a person's interpretation. Now, once you go 30 days, truly I can say that would be a newborn, but we're getting back very close to the prenatal thing. We may not gain anything by that. And I asked the Children's Services Division's representatives this morning about that, and we talked about 30 days versus 12 months or a year. Less the, is it 12 months or it's less than? Is it
up to 12
months. Up to 12.